Chapter 17. The Ride Back. Almost every night in the summer, there was a rodeo in West Yellowstone. This was a big tourist attraction, as well as the main sporting event in the community. West Yellowstone was located farther from a professional baseball, football, basketball, soccer, or hockey team than almost any other point in the United States. Local kids grew up training for the rodeo in the same way that kids in Central Texas grew up playing football. Melissa was competing in the barrel racing competition that night. We had all been planning to attend, but with the excitement of the past day, everyone had forgotten about it, even her parents. There was a brief discussion as to whether or not it made sense to go, given everything else that had happened. But everyone seemed eager for a diversion, even though we were concerned about giving up the hunt for Sasquatch. After all, it had been nearly 12 hours since the bear had broken into the house, so if he really had consumed the necklace, it was getting close to time for him to poop it back out again. If we didn't locate him soon, the jewels might be lost forever. Everyone deferred to Candace for an answer, seeing as they were her jewels. Candace graciously conceded that the hunt for Sasquatch should end.
"You've all done more than enough looking for him," she said, then glanced toward the abandoned mine where her husband was trapped. "And besides, this hunt has caused a great deal of trouble. I don't want to cause any more."
"But if the necklace is important to you," Heidi began.
"It's not so important that people should die to get it back," Candace said. "I don't want people chasing down a grizzly bear in the dark. Jewelry can be replaced. People can't."
Thus, the hunt came to an end. Melissa and her parents needed to be at the rodeo early for her to practice, and they needed to bring her horse, too. So the three of them rode off ahead, racing back to the house. The rest of us returned far more slowly. I was awfully banged up and sore, while Karina and Pete were even less adept on horseback than I was. Karina had never ridden a horse before, although, as an ex-fighter pilot, she was handling it capably, while Pete's natural distrust of animals made him nervous and skittish. He clutched the pommel of his saddle tightly with both hands as he rode, as though expecting the horse to try to buck him off the moment he dropped his guard. Everyone was feeling down about our failure to find Sasquatch and worried for JJ, Zach, and Aaron. But despite that, it was a beautiful ride. There hadn't been much time to focus on the scenery on the way to the mine. Now we returned via a path close to the river, passing through a gorgeous forest of towering pines. Along the way, there were many small cataracts and beaver ponds, and the trees were alive with birdsong. Personally, I wasn't upset that we had given up looking for Sasquatch. By now, I was quite sure that someone besides the bear had taken the jewels. Although that caused me a different kind of angst. JJ had asked me to figure out who had done it, and I still had no idea. In fact, there were still several suspects I hadn't had a chance to talk to yet. However, it wasn't easy to do that on the ride. We had to proceed single file along the path, which wasn't conducive to conversation. Daisy Creek had taken the lead to ensure that no one got lost along the way, and we had all fallen in behind her. I had ended up close to the rear of the line, right behind Evan. Despite the exquisite surroundings, it was obvious he was in a bad mood. Every time we passed a low-hanging pine branch, he would yank a cone off it and then hurl it angrily. And whenever I tried to start a conversation with him, he only gave me monosyllabic answers. Finally, I asked, "What are you so upset about?"
"Oh, gee, I don't know," Evan said sarcastically. "I only blew my family's whole deal to sell our ranch. Now I'm going to be stuck in this lousy place forever."
I fought back the urge to tell him the ranch was possibly the least lousy place I had ever been. Instead, I said,
"No, you didn't.
I told JJ that I thought Sasquatch was in the mine, and so JJ went in to look for the bear, and then he got trapped in there and nearly died. You think he'll buy the ranch after all that?"
If JJ thinks this ranch is a good investment, then he'll buy it no matter what.
How could he think it's a good investment? He could be stuck in that mine all night, thanks to me.
Evan tore another pine cone off a tree and heaved it into a beaver pond.
JJ's predicament isn't your fault, a voice behind us said. It's JJ's.
I turned around, surprised to find that it was Gavin who had spoken. These were the first words I had heard him say, even though I'd been at the ranch for almost 2 days. He had been so quiet, I had even forgotten he was behind us, bringing up the rear of our train. His voice was harsh and gravelly, as though it had fallen into disrepair from disuse.
But he never would have gone into the mine if I hadn't mentioned it, Evan said.
You didn't force his hand, Gavin observed. He's an adult. So are Zach and Aaron. They made their decisions on their own.
I slowed my horse a tiny bit so that I could be closer to Gavin. Do you know how much JJ was paying Zach and Aaron to help him find Sasquatch?
He offered us each $500 for the day, and 10 times that if we recovered the necklace.
That snapped Evan out of his funk.
$5,000? Each? And you didn't take him up on it?
To go into an abandoned mine to corner the biggest grizzly in Montana? I don't need money that badly.
There was something in the way Gavin said money that struck me. His tone was disdainful, as though he didn't care much about money at all, and couldn't understand why anyone else would. Since I actually had Gavin talking, I decided to try my luck and ask the question I'd had in mind for him all along, but hadn't felt comfortable to ask. Is it true that in your entire life you haven't been more than 100 miles away from here? Gavin shrugged.
This is the most beautiful place I could ever imagine. Why would I want to go anywhere else?
You're not interested in seeing anywhere else on Earth? Like the beach? Or the ocean? Or New York City? Gavin laughed at my last question, as though the thought of him in New York City was the most ridiculous thing he'd ever heard. But then he caught himself and said,
To be honest, there is one thing in New York City I'd like to see.
What's that?
The subway. A train that goes underground? That must be an incredible thing.
I almost laughed at this myself, then realized it wasn't such a crazy statement. An underground train was fascinating. I had been amazed the first time I saw one. Most people who lived in cities probably took them for granted, forgetting what an unbelievable accomplishment a subway system was.
You're right, I agreed. It is.
Evan asked,
So would you go to New York to see the subways?
Nah, Gavin said. I wouldn't like it there. I hear the buildings block the sky. You can't even see the sun and the moon there. This is where I belong.
He looked around the forest, taking in the river and the trees with delight, even though he had certainly seen them thousands of times before. In that moment, Gavin seemed to be the most content person I had ever met. I had assumed he'd been so quiet all along because he didn't like other people that much. But now it occurred to me that he simply enjoyed being silent. The idea of him plotting to steal the necklace suddenly seemed ludicrous, because, by his earlier comment, he had no desire for the money it would bring him. His apartment at the bunkhouse wasn't sparsely furnished because he couldn't afford things, but because he didn't want things. Clearly, he was happy with his life exactly the way it was. He wasn't the only one taking in the scenery. Just ahead of Evan, Karina had stopped her horse in the middle of the path and was watching a large pool in the river intently. She signaled for us to stop our horses, then pointed toward the water.
Look, a beaver!
Sure enough, a furry brown animal was swimming through the water, its tiny head poking just above the surface.
Actually, Gavin said, that's a muskrat.
A muskrat?
Karina's excitement wasn't dimmed at all.
Oh, I've never seen one of those.
I realized that I hadn't either, even though muskrats live throughout the United States. Surprisingly, while American zoos like Fun Jungle generally had plenty of African animals, they often lacked native animals, either because they weren't as exciting or they didn't do well in captivity. But even if I had seen a muskrat in a zoo, that wasn't the same as seeing it in the wild. So I stopped to watch it too, as did Gavin. Evan had to stop as well because Karina's horse was blocking his path, although he seemed annoyed by this, as if he'd seen more than enough muskrats in his lifetime. The animal looked quite a bit like a beaver, only smaller and without the beaver's famous flat tail. Instead, its tail was thinner, like that of a rat. The muskrat was dark brown with the large buck teeth common to most rodents. We watched as it swam to the other side of the river, then climbed out onto the far bank and disappeared into the reeds. Karina continued staring at the river.
"The muskrat's gone," Evan told her.
"It might come back," she said.
Evan sighed heavily.
"I doubt it."
"There's a pool just ahead where there's a whole family of beavers," said Gavin.
"Really?" Karina asked excitedly. "Can you show me?"
Gavin nodded, then pulled his horse past hers. While we had been stopped, my parents and the others had ridden on ahead, but we were in no rush to get back, and I still hadn't spent much time with Karina yet. In truth, I had always been a little uneasy around Karina. I usually only saw her when she was working, and at those times, she always had a no-nonsense military demeanor. But now, off the job, she was showing a different side of herself, which was probably closer to the real her. She was relaxed, enthusiastic, and eager to see new things. The beaver pond in question wasn't far. An exceptionally large dam had created a great wide expanse of river. The banks were marked with the stumps of numerous saplings felled by the beavers, each gnawed to a point. As we arrived, we could see a beaver on the far side of the pond dragging a large branch into the water. Karina gasped with excitement. Evan sighed again. Apparently, he was also done with beavers. I had never seen a beaver in the wild myself, so I was quite excited too. I stopped my horse right beside Karina's to watch.
"It's amazing, isn't it?" she asked me.
"Yes," I agreed. "Although it's weird that we were so much closer to a grizzly bear yesterday."
"No kidding," Karina said. "That was insane, right? I went to Alaska once, hoping to see bears, and the closest we got was half a mile. All they looked like was little dots on the horizon. And then we come here, and there's one in the freaking house."
The beaver arrived at its dam, then climbed out, dragging the branch along, looking for a place to put it. The impact the beavers had on their environment was extremely evident from where we sat. Plants couldn't really grow in the faster-moving sections of the river, but the wide, calm pool behind the dam had thick stands of reeds, cattails, and lilies. These attracted lots of birds and insects, while frogs peeped and trout darted just below the surface. I spotted a few fish that were over a foot in length. On the opposite side of the river, the forest gave way to grassland, and I could see the buffalo herd grazing en masse, with the ranch house up the hill beyond it.
"Were you awake when Sasquatch showed up last night?" I asked Karina.
"Oh, no," she replied. "I was sound asleep until I heard you. Although, I think maybe Sasquatch might have come around earlier in the night. Something woke me at 3:10 in the morning."
I was so surprised by this information, I turned away from the beaver to face her.
3:10?
3:11, actually. I wear a watch to sleep, and I always look at it right when I wake up. Force of habit from my Air Force days. If something woke you on an aircraft carrier, you needed to be prepared.
What woke you last night?
I don't know exactly. Do you ever snap awake and not really know why? I'm pretty sure it was a loud noise, but after I was up, I didn't hear anything else.
You mean a noise outside the house? Like Sasquatch poking around?
Exactly, Karina said, although she froze the moment she had finished the word, as if she regretted saying it.
But now that I think about it, when I first woke up, I thought the sound had come from inside the house.
Where inside? I asked.
Evan!
My father shouted from ahead. His voice was so loud that he startled the beaver, which dove off its dam,
plopped into the water, and disappeared from view. "I think we found Sasquatch's trail!"
Evan spurred his horse and galloped ahead, with Gavin right behind him. Karina followed them, so excited about the tracks that she forgot all about answering my question. I slowly brought up the rear. My body was too sore for galloping. I caught up to everyone 100 yards farther along in the forest. Evan was already off his horse, looking over a pile of bear poop the size of a football. It was off to the side of the trail, so even though it was an exceptionally large poop, most people probably wouldn't have noticed it. I wasn't surprised that my father had, though. Dad had spent plenty of time tracking animals in the wild. He might not have been as adept as Evan, but he had a talent for it. Evan was considering the pile of poop carefully, poking it with a long stick.
"It's definitely grizzly scat. It's way too big for a black bear. Big for a grizzly, too, so it's probably Sasquatch's. But it's not fresh enough to be from today. I'd bet it's from yesterday."
"Still," Arturo said, "we might as well make sure. If that is from today, there could be a $1 million necklace in there."
Ray whistled.
"Wow, that'd have to be the most valuable bear poop of all time."
Evan regarded the poop warily, obviously in no mood to poke through it, no matter how much money was at stake.
"Anyone else want to do the honors?"
No one volunteered for a few seconds. Finally, Mom said,
"Oh, all right, I'll do it. It's just poop."
She climbed off her horse, took the stick from Evan's hand, and jabbed the poop with it a few times, tearing it apart. I chose to spend this time looking around the woods in search of birds or other woodland creatures. There were thousands of other, far more attractive things to focus on than my mother dissecting the largest bear poop in history. Finally, Mom spoke again, now sounding disappointed.
"There's no jewelry in here."
I turned back to confirm that she was right. Meanwhile, Evan was kneeling over the ground not far away, having found something else.
"Here's Sasquatch's tracks. He came this way after he pooped."
He followed them across the dusty ground.
"He stopped here, then turned a bit and..."
He trailed off thoughtfully, as though something was bothering him.
"Is something wrong?" my mother asked.
"I smell vanilla," Evan said, sounding extremely concerned.
He looked back at the last paw print, then followed it in the direction it was pointing. This quickly led him to another print, and then another, which took him to a bush that looked as though it had recently taken a beating. Many of the branches had been broken, and even from a distance, I could see a few clumps of bear hair on them. Evan pulled aside the branches to reveal a spot on the ground that was surprisingly free of leaves, given that it was under a bush. Evan knelt to inspect it, picked some dirt off the ground, then held it to his nose and smelled it. He frowned angrily in response.
"There's been meat here. And vanilla. Someone's been baiting bears on our property."
Daisy Creek gasped in horror.
"Who would ever do such a thing?"
"I have a pretty good idea," Evan said angrily.